When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Oh, we certainly do. Welcome, welcome, welcome to a mini season that we are producing here in the summer of 2024, in which we will be looking at and ranking four soundtracks from 90s films. Mm-hmm. I am your co-host on this Gen X journey, Mark D. Blankenship. Nope, that's not right. I am your co-host on this Gen X journey. That's true. And my name is Mark Blankenship, and I am joined by the Winona Ryder to my Christian Slater, Sarah D. Bunting. Hello, Sarah.
Wow. I guess, also be the Winona to your Ethan Hawke.
Or my Johnny Depp. I mean, honestly, yes.
Never your Johnny Depp.
Okay. I'll accept the reality.
You take that back right now. Anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Hello.
Hi. Here we are. So I guess I should start, Sarah, by letting everyone know that our first foray into 90s soundtracks will be with the soundtrack to Singles, the 1992 Cameron Crowe movie that is essentially a shaggily structured, quite pleasant rom-com that happens to be set in the world of grunge-era Seattle. And therefore, the soundtrack is filled with grunge music from Seattleites of the period.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to just briefly let everyone know future episodes, and then I can get into how we do these rankings score-wise for people who might be new?
I love it. Yes. Coming up also, we will be discussing the soundtracks to Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, and the arduously titled William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. But the soundtrack is not arduous at all. So those are our upcoming 90s fun times. And Sarah, as we rank those albums and this one, what's our process going to be?
Well, it's actually very simple. We go through in track order on the album, and we assign point values based on favorite to least favorite. So as we're going through the singles soundtrack, we begin with Wood by Alice in Chains. If that is my number one song, it gets 13 points. If it's my number two, it gets 12, and so on down the line to 13th place and 1 point. I rank them this way. My esteemed colleague, Mark D., ranks them this way.
Duchess of.
the Duchess of, ranks them this way. And our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/mastass also have the opportunity to help us create these rankings that have the force of law. We literally could not do these ranking episodes without you, or I guess we could, but we wouldn't.
It'd be so much less fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, sometimes Mark and or I get wild hairs about stuff, and you listeners have to, like, talk us off the skinny branch that we're out on, asking who wants a dick. So that's how it works. And if that was kind of a shaggy explanation, well, everything will become clear as we go along. So we hope that you will continue to join us and that we'll hear from you on our Discord as well. If you become a Patreon supporter, that's where you can take us to task for our decisions in life and also here. Shall we begin?
Yes, please. Sarah, I will start by saying, I could have sworn I had seen the movie Singles, but as I watched it in preparation for this episode, I realized I had never seen it before. So Singles was just such a part of the cultural ether in 1992 for the type of person that I was that I knew a lot about it despite never having seen it. Now, however, I have seen it, and I don't know if you watched it recently or if you remember much about it, but
I did. I had watched it many, many times shortly after it came out because it was one of those movies that always seemed to be on like AMC on Saturday afternoon or whatever.
Right.
And it is, I would argue, a Poppy Fields movie, although I don't think it's ever on cable anymore. But yeah, I hadn't seen it in at least 20 years, and I was really like actually a little apprehensive about how it held up, and also whether my then extremely intense crush on Campbell Scott, derived from Dying Young of all goddamn things, was gonna also be embarrassing. That second thing, definitely not. Boyfriend is still hot, even though some of the t-shirts, oof. But it was actually still charming. And I mean, there's parts of it that I'm like, ugh, get on with it. But what a pleasure to have this little sort of like show that literally inspired Friends, actually, I found out recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that it's not like meandering around too much. Like it's kind of in and out in an hour and 40, which thank you. Just be what you are. Matt Dillon's wig is a problem. Matt Dillon's whole character is a problem. There are some of these things that I don't relate to now that I'm not in my 20s anymore. I don't relate as strongly, but I really enjoyed it. What did you think, having never seen it?
Yeah, coming to this movie at the age of 45, interesting. I have to say, though, I was charmed because it was so... Cameron Crowe's movies, I was reminded, at their best, have an insouciance about them that I really enjoy. There's a kind of tra-la-la, everyone's having fun, aren't we clever quality that I find really charming. And, you know, it probably reached its apex, his form of movie making with Jerry Maguire and Almost Famous. But this movie is such a good example of what he is good at, which is interesting, intelligent people being able to behave in a way that seems somewhat recognizably human. And he is not someone who cares about a tightly structured plot so much as he cares about creating a mise-en-scène, if you will, just like a mood, a world. And I did feel by the end of the movie that I understood the world that they were living in. And, you know, yeah, the movie has some, it's intentionally artificial in the way that people speak to the camera and what have you, but there's still this feeling of real affection for real people and the real rhythms of how they speak to one another. And I was also struck by the fundamental paradox of a movie this lighthearted being soundtracked by songs that are, by and large, so heavy. And I thought it was really nice to remember that the grunge scene, though obviously now remembered as being such a dark time full of negative emotion and eventual suicide, also had this element. The music was being made by people who were also willing, by and large, to be in this film and goof on themselves. The entire roster of Pearl Jam is in this movie. Chris Cornell is in this movie. There's
Eddie Vedder has lines. He's actually pretty good.
And Lane Staley from Alice in Chains is in the movie. And it's just... it was nice to remember now at my vantage point that these were actually kids in these bands and that like kids, they could have fun and occasionally be goofy. And I at the time was so young that they seemed really grown up to me, and their intensity seemed so raw and so real, but also they're like dorks. And I realize that when you watch old movies or home videos or whatever of Kurt Cobain, that comes through, but to have them be put in this context was really nice.
I also thought it was interesting as I was listening along with the soundtrack and then kind of like half watching the movie later, because I have seen it in the past many, many times, and I didn't need to, you know, refresh myself on every single Citizen Dick scene. But the way that the soundtrack puts grunge in direct conversation with guitar god heroes of previous generations, there's a Led Zeppelin cover, actual Jimi Hendrix is on the soundtrack, and then is also kind of having that conversation in the movie between like your parents' music and your music. Mm-hmm. How seriously you take yourself versus how seriously you take previous generations' rock icons, in a way that, like, I wouldn't say that Cameron Crowe is known for his subtlety, generally speaking, but this conversation that just suggests itself, he's really good at, like you said, creating a mise-en-scene, and in that way, like, letting the conversations culturally that various, not just characters, but also songs and eras of narrative are going to have with each other once he gives you the setup, he's good at just sort of like letting these connections make themselves apparent, I would say, without necessarily being like,
Yeah, that's really well said.
I might be giving him too much credit, but I'm comfortable with that. Why not?
No, but you're right. This is, in a movie like Jerry Maguire or Almost Famous, the speeches are longer and perhaps a bit more overdetermined. And here, this is a looser, more playful way of getting at the things he likes to talk about, which are the ways that communities of young people are formed, the ways that people address their vulnerable emotions. And he does get at them in a way here that lets us figure it out for ourselves a little bit more.
Yeah. And the connections between music and the creation of community with music as its framework are definitely like, Almost Famous, again, is a little more overdetermined, but that's also like a literal biographical origin story for him. So
yeah. And, you know, also, obviously, he wrote for Rolling Stone, and you can just feel in all of his movies, and obviously this movie, the deep abiding love that he has for music as a way of understanding the world. And hey, you and I feel that
Samesies.
Too, obviously.
Yeah.
And before we get on to the first song, I do just need to report that I agree with you. Campbell Scott is so dreamy in this movie.
Yeah. He really... I mean, that scene when she comes back from her work trip and he's like, like practically covered in morning dew. He's so excited. And then she's like, so yeah, work was good. Frenzies. And he's like, sure. His phone scene in the phone booth.
He's leaving that voice that, not voicemail, answering machine message, as we called it then.
it just seemed like a documentary that he's sort of like, I've had many beers, and blah, 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 and then occasionally has to pause to scream at these stoners. This is not a bathroom. Like, so good. Anyway.
And also, when they have their sex scene, Cameron Crowe does not cover up the little zits on his back, which to me is such a sexy detail. Like, he's a real person.
And I had completely forgotten, I guess that guy was on the Sonics, and he's just like doing his like anodyne post-game interview, and the sports reporter's like, anything else? He's like, yeah, Steve, don't come yet. So good.
So good. Okay. Well, without further ado, that brings us into the first song on the soundtrack, which is Wood, W-O-U-L-D, not W-O-O-D, by Alice in Chains. And we do, in fact, have a clip, so let's play it.
I I don't know about you. I always forget how much I like Alice in Chains. And then I just don't like follow up. I don't know why I don't do that. Lane Staley, may he rest, could really, really holler. I listened to the song a couple times because I was like, why? I was sort of trying to work out why I always like lose touch with Alice in Chains, even though it's, I believe, also Alice in Chains on the Clerks soundtrack, and that's one of my favorite songs of all time. This is like less assertively atonal and like showing off fretwork than a lot of grunge is in my memory, like Alice in Chains generally. And I was also struck because this song, like a lot of the songs on this soundtrack, spends the last third of the track doing the boast. And I was reminded of something that you said, I think about Kansas, that it was like, there is something about 70s arena rock that has a musical theater dramaturgy element to it that you responded to. And I found myself thinking of this, and that sort of started that leitmotif for me of the ways in which grunge and is in conversation with Hendrix, Steve Vai, Robert Plant, and Jimmy Page. And also the way that this soundtrack is structured so that that is not like, it's not necessarily text in the movie, but when you're listening to the soundtrack, that subtext is more legible. Mm. I am talking out of my ass, but that's nothing new. Welcome, new listeners. Number two, 12 points. You?
Mm-hmm. So I also have got a very limited understanding of the Alice in Chains repertoire. I basically know this song and Man in the Box, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're good songs. And I also recently, and I mean within the last 6 weeks, heard a song from Heart's 1993 album, Desire Walks On, that is called Ring Them Bells, which is a Bob Dylan song that Heart covered on that album. And Lane Staley is on there doing this exceptionally good harmony vocal with them. And I have been listening to it nonstop. It's a fantastic song. It might be one of my favorite Heart songs I'd never heard before. And I think that one of the reasons he's on there has to be because Cameron Crowe was married to Nancy Wilson of Heart when this movie was being made. Heart shows up later on the soundtrack. I just have to believe that all of that led to him singing with them on that song. And it's so good. And that makes me appreciate what Lane Staley could do as a singer. And it reminds me that one of the nice things about grunge music is that for all of its overt mopiness, it's actually usually very melodic music with good singing. And all of the crunchy guitars that are surround the melody and the singing don't distract from that for me. So I also really enjoyed this song, and for me, it was fourth place, 10 points, and the listeners just went ahead and gave out their gold medal right away, because for them, it was first place.
Dang!
I know, I wasn't, and it was close. I mean, the second place song was within two votes, but I was like, okay, y'all gonna come ahead and do that? Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, spoiler, there is a sort of vast plaid middle on this soundtrack for me, but we'll get into it anyway. Listeners, that is unexpected and delightful. Well done.
I agree. So I will just add, because I am so happy to have the Billboard Book of Rock Tracks, that I'm able to tell you that Wood reached number 19 on the modern rock charts, on the mainstream rock charts, I should say. So one of the hits from this score soundtrack, but we'll have more to come.
And I will also note, since I just looked it up to confirm that I wasn't thinking of someone else, but on the Clerk soundtrack, the Alice in Chains track is Got Me Wrong. And if in the course of sort of listening along with this and prepping it for yourself, you were like, huh, Alice in Chains, I should investigate that further. A, you're correct. B, Got Me Wrong is a really good song and in this same vein as Wood.
And actually, that song reached number 7 on the mainstream rock charts, Got Me Wrong. So, hey.
Fucking A.
Well, so what's next on our soundtrack adventure?
Next on our soundtrack adventure, speaking of Pearl Jam, is Breath by Pearl Jam. We do not have a clip, which is, I guess, kind of unfortunate because my notes on this are like, okay, I don't remember this song, but like, I was not a Pearl Jam guy. I'm still not a Pearl Jam guy. I am not, I don't know. It was so overplayed when I was in college is the bulk of the problem. But there is also, to me, I don't think this is actually true based on anything I've ever heard Eddie Vedder say, but there is a clinical quality to the build of a Pearl Jam song that I find, like, Nirvana's build is much more messy and chaotic, and I find that much closer emotionally to my vid, as we used to say back in the 90s. I don't actively dislike Pearl Jam. I'm just not interested. There is an emotional featurelessness to it, and a lot of the songs just sound the same. Does this one suck as much as I think Even Flow does? No. I don't care. Number 12, 2 points.
So interesting. I am very much a Pearl Jam guy.
I know.
Which I guess kind of longtime listeners might not be surprised. I've never really cared for Nirvana all that much. Although, like everyone, I understand. I actually really like Smells Like Teen Spirit. It is a great song. Mm-hmm. But the deeper cuts of Nirvana, I always felt like they sounded the same. And for me, the Pearl Jam appeal is in, well, partially in the structure that you just described. And I also find that Eddie Vedder's voice is such a pleasure to listen to. And there's an emotional quality to his lyric writing that I have connected to. Now, that being said, Sarah, what I really mean is the album Verses, I know front to back and love. And then there are songs, maybe six other Pearl Jam songs from their entire career that I really know well. The hits from 10 and then like Better Man and then a song that came out a few years ago called The Fixer. So when I say I'm a Pearl Jam guy, I don't mean I'm a Pearl Jam guy in the way that I'm, say, a Robin guy.
Right.
But as these things go, Pearl Jam is my choice here, and the fact that I have, in the last year, actively chosen to listen to Pearl Jam music in a way I would never actively choose to listen to Nirvana music.
Sure.
That being said, I will probably never actively choose to hear Breath again. And that is fine with me because this song is the very epitome of the plaid middle that you described before.
Yeah.
It's just, hey, it's so clearly the stereotypical extra song that we gave to a soundtrack. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of personality, but there's not much. And that's why for me, I put it pretty much dead in the middle at ninth place with 5 points.
Yeah.
And the listeners did pretty much the same. It's in a tie for eighth place with them with 6 points.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. And like a lot of these things, I actually respect, in theory, that if Vedder and company looked at each other and were like, let's give this B-minus effort and leave it a minute too long because it's for a soundtrack, they still got paid. I respect that, but it's just not speaking to me. And if I hear it in a like deli or whatever, I'm not going to recognize it. It's just, yeah.
I say again, where is the humor in that they show in the film in their music?
Yeah.
Well, like, it's okay to laugh occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we've talked about this so many times, and when we get to Mudhoney, we will get back to that.
Oh, yes, we will. Yes, we
but
will.
First, let's talk about Seasons by Chris Cornell.
One of the things that I thought when I was listening to this so shortly after listening to a song with Lance Daly is that, sadly, this soundtrack is like a graveyard.
Yes, that is literally my first note about this song is here's where I guess we should talk about who we're listening to who is still alive.
Yeah, and I wish that there were more people who were still alive that
yes,
we were listening to,
I mean,
frankly.
God, yeah. Yeah. I didn't remember this song at all. I didn't remember this vibesy opening. This is another example. We don't have a clip, but trust me when I say that Chris Cornell, who I think was perhaps underrated in terms of his vocal instrument, mm-hmm. is doing what I would definitely characterize as an homage to a Robert Plant vocal. Mm. And that weird conversation between the parts of Led Zeppelin that are considered proto heavy metal, punk, and grunge was sort of, it was fascinating to think about that while listening to this song. But beyond that, the song is like not interesting. And that's true of a lot of things on this soundtrack. Like, I don't think this is a bad song, and I would not be surprised if the listeners really liked it. But this was, I mean, plaid middle to the max, 11th place, 3 points.
Well, I also put it in 11th place, so I'll just go ahead and say that now. This is a song that I tried to listen to 3 times, and my mind wandered every single time.
It just slides off. Yeah.
Yeah. I it wasn't like I was actively upset by it, but like you said, it just slides off. I would sit there and think, okay, I'm gonna really pay attention to the song this time. 3 minutes in, I'm like, egg salad for lunch?
Yeah, I mean, you get into minute 4 and you're like, where are we? Who is this? Like, you just don't even remember who it is, and you have to start over. Yeah, totally my experience also.
Now the listeners put this song in a tie with Breath in 8th place. So similarly, not enamored, I would say. But now it's time to really mix up the sound, tone, and energy.
Uh-huh.
Because now we're going to Replacements lead singer Paul Westerberg and his contribution, which I believe is the song that runs over the final credits.
I think so.
Yeah, this is Dyslexic Heart. To read, I misconstrue what you mean. Slip me a napkin, and now that's a start. Is this your name or a doctor's eye chart? I try and comprehend you, but I got a dyslexic heart. I ain't dying to offend you.
I'm so glad you clipped that, because one of my first notes is, how many pop songs have the word misconstrue in them?
Yeah, seriously.
I salute you, Mr. Westerberg.
So I actually only came to hear the music of The Replacements because of this show. I didn't grow up listening to that song that Alex Chilton I really like. I only know because of this work on this show.
Mm-hmm. But with our guest, Taylor Cole. We'll link it in the show notes.
That's exactly right. Taylor. I had forgotten that, of course, I did know this song at the time. I hadn't thought about this song in so long. It is, to me, so great. It was number 4 on the alternative rock chart. Now, there's the mainstream rock chart and the alternative rock chart. Let's not go down the path of what the difference is, because honestly, who can even tell sometimes? But this is technically, from a chart perspective, the biggest hit on the album. And I would say it's the definitive hit from this album, even though Paul Westerberg is not a definitive grunge artist. He is not definitive to the aesthetic of the film, but this is
not
the song.
Grunge. This is like Acoustic Junction mid-90s shit that was happening like 5 years before somehow.
Yeah. It's weird that a song that is so unlike both the rest of the soundtrack and the aesthetic of the film is actually the key song on the soundtrack, but here we are.
How key was it for you?
Well, it's first place for me, Sarah. That's how key it was.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I mean, lyrically, in retrospect, it's like, okay. Like, it's a lot. Is this a library or a bar? Like, it's a barf kind of. Like, these lyrics are a little, like, cutesy poo. And I really struggled with, like, and I struggled with this when the album came out, like listening to it on CD and being like, am I a bad like indie rock fan because the least grungy shit on the album is by far my favorite?
Yeah.
Maybe don't care. Because here's the other thing. This is part of that conversation that all the tracks are having with each other, and that where it's listed in the soundtrack is like probably after all of these 5.5 minute dirges, you need a break.
Like, yes.
Emotionally, aurally, from like feeling like your flannel is weighed down with water and despair. Here's Paul Westerberg with a like montage of Seattle scenes. Okay. Great. And there's a reason, like, I think the other Westerberg track on this soundtrack scores the opening credits.
Yeah.
That was not done for no fucking reason. So I am comfortable with number one. I have had the song stuck in my head since we decided to do this mini season like 2 weeks ago. So, you know, let it be.
And it also occurs to me that you do need your opening and closing songs to indicate the emotional context of the film. And this is what the characters' emotions are like. Mm-hmm. These are bright, poppy, emotional characters. They're not grunge characters. The grunge musicians have to play Paul Westerberg versions of themselves in mm-hmm. this film. So absolutely. And also, you know what? Like you just said, sue me. I like the song with hooks and sunshine, and I'm not going to be a different person today, tomorrow, or yesterday. So the patrons also, were it not for the Alice in Chains upset, mm-hmm. this one would have been a triple one. But in fact, it was a very close second for them. So very strong performance across the board for the song that makes me the happiest on the entire album. So great.
Yeah, I think that this was a maybe an attempt, like the film singles, I think, in order to get actual like amounts of butts in the seats that would make money and get the movie made, you had to have a slightly poppier like entree, like a lower step for top 40 people like me to get into the story.
That's exactly right. And frankly, we're not making like a sad ass documentary. We're making a fun little rom-com where mm-hmm. Campbell Scott's character designs trains, like public transit. So, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Next, we have a curiously named act, the Lovemongers, but actually it's just Heart, who are from Seattle mm-hmm. and who, like I mentioned before, had a member, Nancy Wilson, who was married to Cameron Crowe. So there are two obvious reasons that Heart should be on this soundtrack. And I remember years ago, we read, you and I, the oral history of grunge, Mark Yarm's Everybody Loves Our Town, a title mm-hmm. that we'll come back to.
Yes, yes, we will.
I remember people in the book specifically saying that everybody in Seattle respected Heart. So mm-hmm. I am glad that they are present here. I think that one of the reasons they didn't include the name Heart is because of label stuff, but I don't exactly remember. But whatever the politics, it is also nice to have one song on the album that features vocals by women. This is the only song on the album that does so. And Battle of Evermore, it's a live cover of a Led Zeppelin song. And you've already referenced Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. Like, they're definitely permeate the groundwater here. And sure. But I will say that for me, though, Ring Them Bells, I mentioned earlier, is one of my favorite Heart songs now, and I wish I'd been listening to it for decades. I don't ever need to hear this again. It's just really long and indulgent, and yes, Ann Wilson sounds wonderful, but she sounds wonderful on everything, so I'll just go listen to something that I like more. For me, this was 10th place, 4 points.
I put it in fifth with 9 Ooh. Points because I really enjoyed thinking about like the gender flipping of the narrator here. I really enjoyed the sort of the bond between a Wilson vocal and a plant vocal. And like that this made me enjoy the song more. Like, I don't need to go back to this song again either, especially, but if I did, I would go to this version because I thought that it was doing something interesting, and also vis-a-vis kind of sanding some edges off things that are, while extremely popular, also extremely themselves and not for everyone, that I think this is like an interesting shifting of Led Zeppelin to like be different for people who would usually pass it over. So I thought it did that well. And I was surprisingly, like I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I didn't really remember it at all. So yeah, fifth place. What did the listeners do?
That's really well said. That the, its heart is able to repurpose Led Zeppelin so that I can actually get through the whole song without getting exhausted by the cock swagger of a typical Led Zeppelin song.
I mean, it's still too long, but at least it seems like there's a homage purpose to that versus just wanking. So
yes. Okay, you know what? Having now heard that argument, I would, in retrospect, perhaps bump this up one or two places, but c'est la vie. The listeners were in between us both. They put this song in ninth place and gave it 5 points.
Makes sense.
Now, I believe you pulled a clip of our next track. Am I correct?
I did. It's Chloe Dancer / Crown of Thorns by the delightfully named Mother Love Bone. This song is epic in length and, I mean, I think explicitly in its composition. It is two songs, so I kind of excuse 8 minutes plus, but not necessarily because I don't. Well, let's hear a clip and then we can talk about whether I think they should have just kept it to regular lyric length. It's just that a bunch of times. Like, there is an argument to be made that what this evoked in me was an extremely crystalline, distinct memory of listening to this album and music like this in a boy's room and being like, this is the price of getting to go to second base with a cute boy is pretending that I give a shit about this song that has been going on for a week and a half. You could make that argument. I'm not going to, because I wasted half of college in dorm rooms listening to 6.5 minute songs that had no terrain. There were no acts, nothing. Like, this is only an epic in how goddamn long it is. 13th place. Get to the fucking point, Bone.
I was nervous when you pulled a clip of this song that you were going to be like, this is a masterpiece that makes me understand the inner workings of my heart.
I mean, you and got I the actually, ass part, right?
And I love the lyric where they randomly insult some woman for becoming a teacher. Like, what the hell is that?
What?
I thought you were going to be awesome, but now you're a substitute teacher. Well, you know what? Substitute teachers do important work. Why don't you shut up?
Yeah, why don't you substitute some insight for what you actually wrote? Ew!
Oh, also, Mother Love Bone, for those of you who do not know, is part of the foundation myth of the whole grunge scene. It was a band that was fronted by a guy named Andrew Wood. He died very young. He died in 1990. Two members of Mother Love Bone, Stone Gossard and Jeff Ament, went on to co-found Pearl Jam. There is a mural that says the name Mother Love Bone at the very beginning of singles that you can see. Like, clearly they've been memorialized in the town. And then you also may remember, listeners, the band called Temple of the Dog, in which Eddie Vedder was the lead singer. That band was sort of a tribute to Mother Love Bone. It was a one-off. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of exhausting lore. Exhausting for those of us who weren't there. You know, if I lived through that, maybe I would feel differently, but I didn't and I don't. So I could not dislike this song more, Sarah. It's just song almost feels too generous because you're so right. There is no terrain. And in fact, if it were all coming in at a 10 and it was just all mountaintop, maybe, but it's just flat denuded tundra. There's just literally nothing. It's just boring as shit. And it's like the food is terrible, but the portions are large. Like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. I mean, with respect for what this band led to, like, and if you enjoy it, I'm also not trying to insult you. Like, I don't think anyone's wrong, but this particular kind of, like, it's like you're watching a jam band being born from the eggshell of a dirge, and it's this is an important process that is nevertheless not necessary for me to witness again because it takes a very long time and is not compelling.
Yes, and if you love this song, of course you should love this song. No insult meant, but
like what you like.
But I don't like this.
No.
Also, the patrons don't like this either. They put it in 11th place with 3 points.
All right. Yeah, makes sense.
So I will just say the lowest possible score a song could get in this episode was 3, and this song got a 5. So just, okay.
Wow. All right.
We do not have a clip of the next song, which is Soundgarden's Birth Ritual. And of course, that is Chris Cornell's band. So it's the second vocal from Chris Cornell we've heard. But for me, Sarah, the absolute swaggering insanity of what Chris Cornell is doing vocally here is kind of cool. It's just the song is, and there's this really hard guitar riff in this song that just gets played over and over and over again. And it's so, it is just heavy metal. And his voice is, when I was saying before about this music, this era has, and this genre has a lot of great singing. This is an example of that. Birth Ritual is a dope performance of a heavy song. And typically, as everyone knows by now, I don't love heavy metal music, but I really do think this song is pretty good. I would listen to it again. It's just so outré, and I really am digging it. And I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, that our patron Judy mentioned her love for this song in the poll, the comments on the poll. And so I see you, Judy, and feel you. So I put this song in 7th place and gave it 7 points.
I was about where you are. I thought that this was a outstanding performance of a just okay composition. Another Robert Plantish vocal, which, you know, can mean whatever you want it to mean. In this context, for me in this song, it's good. The composition seems very sort of like, not juvenile, but just like very like elemental in a sense that suggests that there is no there. And this is another one that is a little too long and does not have sufficient terrain in the story to justify the length. So, but I thought it was extremely well executed given that, you know, that it's like, I wouldn't order this, but since it came to the table, it's a, you know, it's pretty good. kind of right in the middle, 8th place, 6 points.
Yeah. I mean, we were basically in exact,
yeah,
in exact agreement. And I'll tell you who didn't agree with us, though. The patrons. They put this song in last.
Wow.
Which I find shocking.
No, that's weird.
But like, okay. I guess that this is one of those songs that we asked the patrons to vote for half of the songs. Like, pick your top 7 songs.
Yeah.
And this is not a song that anybody's going to feel passionate enough about, except a few people, to put it in their top half. Fair enough. I do think it's better than last, but obviously, but that's okay. So, 1 point from the patrons, but then a combined 13 points from you and me. So it's definitely doing better than some of the other tracks on here.
And once again, it's, why is Judy always against the field? I don't know.
Yeah, what it is. Yeah, I know. Judy is the cheese that stands alone.
You do.
But please never leave us because we love and value you very much. Now, next, Sarah, I have to say that one of my favorite moments of watching the movie Singles, I laughed out loud when the characters go to dance at a club and the song that they are dancing to is not, say, Finally by CC Peniston. It's not I Want You Back by the Jackson 5. It's not anything that one might normally dance to. It's State of Love and Trust by Pearl Jam. Just the song that everyone in the club is going wild dancing to. And it's just so ludicrous that I love it.
I mean, we have a clip, right?
Yes, we do.
Let's
imagine yourself dancing to this.
This is not one that you can skate to. Here is a clip. I may have ranked this too low. I mean, let it stand. We'll see what everybody else did. But this was sort of a really interesting, like, this doesn't strike me as typical Pearl Jam. It's much less portentous, turgid than you might expect from this group. Or from the stuff that's like typically overplayed on, I guess, oldies radio now.
Yeah, at this point.
But this gave me, and partly it's the scene that it's soundtracking, but this gave me like a not Violent Femmes vibe, but like it was closer to that sort of like speedy new wave. We took a bunch of crosstops and now we're going to play a show and every song is under 2 minutes vibe, that like that grunge vibe is what I like versus the like kind of homage, which like there's something wrong with Black Flag, but whatever. So all this by way of saying this had an energy that was not especially Pearl Jam-esque to me, but it's still wasn't able to climb out of that plaid middle for me either, so 10th place, 4 points.
Most weight loss plans are one size fits all, but Noom builds personal plans that meet your needs. Noom takes into account dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs to build a plan that works for you. Noom is built for your psychology and your biology. Noom weight uses psychology. That's why they say losing weight starts with your brain. But it also takes into account your unique biological factors, which also affect weight loss success. The program helps you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have cravings. Everyone's journey is different, so your daily lessons are personalized to you and your goals. Noom helps you build new habits for a healthier lifestyle. To date, Noom has helped more than 5.2 million people lose weight. Noom's flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold. Individual results may vary. Visit our website at Noom.com for more information.
So I also really like this more energetic version of grunge music. And again, on the Versus album, you have songs that I think Pearl Jam really uses to nail this up-tempo excitement, songs like Animal, but that's not what we're talking about today.
Yeah, I forgot about Animal.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 against one, five. Now the I really do like this song and enjoy bopping around to it, though I would never go to dance at a club. But
no.
I would say that the best thing to do with this song is to not listen to the lyrics, because just here are some of the lyrics to State of Love and Trust. I listen for the voice inside my head. Nothing. I'll do this one myself. Lay her down as priest does. Should the Lord be accountant, will be in my honor. Make it painfully quick. Promises are whispered in the age of darkness. Want to be enlightened like I want to be told the end. Like, what? That doesn't make that.
Is the narrator a cult leader? I'm sincerely asking.
It's possible. It is possible that this is meant to be an up-tempo song about someone abusing their religious authority. A cult leader, like you said. Now, I have to tell you, perhaps I should be ashamed, but I'm not. I didn't really dig all that deeply into the lyric of this song because I was just like, this is a bunch of word salad, but the vibe is right. And for me, Sarah, this actually ended up being second place with 12
points. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds surprising.
I just really needed some energy, especially after Chloe Dancer. So I was very happy to get it.
Fair.
The patrons were between us because you were in 10th, I was in 2nd, and they put this song in 6th place, which gave it 8.
Cool.
Now, you pulled a clip of Mudhoney's Overblown, if I'm not mistaken.
You're not mistaken. this was like literally in the middle for me, this track, but I had to cut a clip because, first of all, because of this like conversation that we've been talking about all episode, this also is much closer to that punk vibe aurally.
Yes.
And yes. There's the title of that fantastic book, which we always recommend anytime it comes up, by Mark Yarm. He's also a pretty sweet social media follow.
And he wrote actually, and on the day that we're recording this, he just published a story in the New York Times about Hozier, which is really good. And I highly recommend that you listen to it.
Yeah. He's good at this shit. Maybe we should try to have him on the podcast. But until then, let's listen to a clip of Mudhoney's Overblown. I really like that chord progression. I like the, I feel, maybe this was dead serious, that they're like, yeah, this is too overrated now. Fuck this. We're going to go live in Tacoma. Like, whatever.
Seattle's over.
That it's like, now that everybody loves our town, we're going to leave. It sucks here. And there's also like a, we don't care to learn to play our instruments droning punk vibe, but then towards the end of that clip it's evident that like they do know how to play their instruments, and they're just sort of like, this is just a wink basically. I liked the vibe a lot. I mean, unfortunately, a sort of ironical punk still ends up being punk like to the listener, and sometimes it's not great. And so it was right in the middle for me. Seventh place, 7 points. What about you?
I had to give this song a slightly higher ranking because of the verse, you got a sack full of candy, all I got was a rock. They got you by your big business, boy. Nice to know you're packing extra socks. That is such a good read.
Yeah, it is really good.
I mean, that I doff my cap to that. So I ended up putting the song in fifth place, giving it 9 points. Because again, just the snotty punk vibe of it was fun to me.
Yes.
And at this point, too, I was just starting to feel such retroactive rage about the slower, dirgier songs that I had already listened to. Like, they were making me madder the more I thought about them. Mm-hmm. So I was probably a little bit more generous to this song than I might have been if it had come first. But, you know, here we are. So the patrons, however, not really into it, gave it only 2 points in 12th place.
Fair.
Yeah, it's not like I can muster the energy to get passionate in the defense of Overblown by Mudhoney, but I'm not mad at it.
I'm not mad at the second Westerberg track, which is up next, called Waiting for Somebody. My own notes on the first one, which you and I both put in number one, were that the lyrics tended towards twee, but there was a sincerity to it. It was not like cynical about it.
Mm-hmm.
This seemed a little more calculated to be like cute and form a contrast with everything going on around it. But I still was relieved to hear it, and like competent assembly that was done in under 4 minutes at this point was like, welcome to the basic curve from Buncey. So, did it deserve 11 points at third place? Maybe not. Were a lot of other people blathering on for 6 minutes and making this happen? Probably. What did you do?
So, first of all, I totally understand why you put this in third place. Because, sometimes we can only rank these things in the context of the other songs of an episode. And in the context of this episode, even this second tier Paul Westerberg contribution is such a relief that.
And this is definitely one of those soundtracks where it's like clear number one, clear number two, everything else is like nine, but that's not how rankings work. So you have to make things have to go somewhere. Anyway, sorry.
Continue. That's exactly right. Yeah, it's like clear that Alice in Chains and Paul Westerberg gave us the most essential songs on the record. Well, and there's one more coming that I think is pretty essential. But I ended up putting this song in sixth place only because I felt like I had already given Paul Westerberg his due, and putting it in the top half felt right to me. Mm-hmm. But the patrons, much closer to you, they put it in fourth place. So clearly we were all just like, oh, thank God. Like, it's a nice short song with a hook. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, was this written to go in the promos for TV? Probably. That's okay. Does the job.
Yeah. Sometimes I watch TV. So, okay. Sometimes.
I am teased. Thank you.
So, speaking of songs that don't do anything or go anywhere, next we get May This Be Love by Jimi Hendrix.
I just...
May this be boring?
I mean, yes, it may. I rank this quite high because of the audio colloquy.
Ooh.
Don't get up, I'll fire myself. Among all of these sort of guitar-forward genres, and the fact that, like, he is from Seattle, he is visually referenced in the movie because Cliff is, like, laying on his tombstone.
Yes.
And you can't... I mean, I love Jimi Hendrix, but there is a lot of it that it's like, he sings a verse, and then for 5 minutes, he... LSD and his guitar that he's about to light on fire are doing something that we probably shouldn't be watching because it's extremely personal. And so I wish that they had picked a different Jimi Hendrix, but of course they weren't going to. Like, of course they're not going to put something like
Foxy Lady
or like South Saturn Delta, which is like just saying the title of the song, My Eggs, we're all like, eh? I mean, that song is so fucking hot. It shouldn't be allowed to exist. But even like Crosstown Traffic, like something that we can, something that the listener like recognizes, but can still respect the craft. This is just like, I don't know, trying to find a bathroom at Woodstock. I don't need this. And yet it was still fourth. This soundtrack is extremely weird. Like, this is now, bottom half all-time Jimmy for me, but it's still fourth because it's like, all right, I understand what it's doing here. I understand what Jimmy is. I'll allow it.
Yeah, you are right that you couldn't really have a Seattle-based rock soundtrack without Jimi Hendrix and Hart in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really the only missing artist is Nirvana, really. And and I guess Candlebox.
Oh, the only ones having any fun? Them?
Yes. Yeah. And also this was pre-Candlebox, so it's allowed. I totally intellectually understand everything you just said, but I really thought this song was boring. So I put it in 12th place with 2 points because
it is boring.
But I respect what you've done and I respect the reason that you've done it. The patrons were closer to me. They gave it they put it in 10th place and just gave it 4 points.
Yeah. That's probably more correct. So they and I canceled each other out, and that is appropriate, it seems.
Now, I did pull a clip of the Screaming Trees Nearly Lost You, which I should also note was another one of the hits on alternative radio from this soundtrack. I'm just going to vamp for a second while I look them up in my book, but I believe that this song peaked on modern rock radio at number 7 and... Oh, no, a number 5. Okay, this was a number 5 alt-rock hit. This is Nearly Lost You by Screaming Trees. Calling me back once again.
This felt like generic B-roll that they would have replaced over the Melrose credits on the DVDs because they no longer had the rights to the actual Screaming Trees. Little did I know that the Screaming Trees sounded like their own temp track. With that said, I'm not mad at it, but I couldn't go higher than ninth because plaid middle again. So 5 points from me. Why did you decide to clip this one?
Because I love it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
You also like the Melrose soundtrack, though, right?
I love
it. Okay, so here we all are together.
There's a song on that soundtrack called A Star Is Bored that I just always loved so much.
Gorgeous.
And the Frente song on that soundtrack is so good. Anyway, we'll talk about that a different time. For me, you are absolutely correct that this sounds like either the temp track on Melrose Place or the song that the... Let's say that Joey in Friends joins a rock band for one episode. This is the song that that rock band sings. And I'm not mad at it. Also, this is a song that sounds more like, less like grunge and more like the other types of corporate rock that would be popular in the later 90s. Like there's definitely a Filter vibe. There's a Nickelback vibe. Yes. There's a Lifehouse vibe.
Yep.
This is like rock, quote unquote, hard rock for the school bus, but that's okay because I'm not mad at a big obvious hook, and I put it in third place with 11 points.
All right. The trees are screaming in gratitude is what's happening right now. What did the listeners do?
They also put it in third place, but also they sure did. It's a weird soundtrack, Sarah. It's just a weird soundtrack.
It really is. And ranking it sometimes is just like, again? Like, didn't we just hear this 5 times?
Yeah, for real. Now, that being said, I'll tell you who doesn't sound like anybody else on this album and who always stood out to me in the best way in this whole period is the Smashing Pumpkins. They have their own sound.
They do. And they're not afraid to let you know that for like 9 minutes. The clip's not that long. So let's wrap it up with Korgs and the Gang in Drown. This song is inexcusably long, but they do, like, it becomes clear, I'm going to say like 5.5 minutes in, that everyone is just playing their instruments like separately. Like, you know how little kids, they have this concept called parallel play where like the kids are all together, but they're not like playing with each other. They're just playing next to each other.
Yes.
That it's extremely sonically confrontational, and it just devolves, but I feel like there is terrain. I feel like there is narrative here.
Yes.
I feel like Billy Corgan's narration here and in The Greatest Day, like the big song that is very similar to this one, actually.
Oh, Today. Yeah
Today. There is a sense of wanting to push the boundaries of like, can a song contain our trying to blow it up from the inside of the song using the song? If that makes any sense. Maybe if I had gone to school in music theory, I would be able to put this comprehensibly, but I didn't. Here's what I can tell you. I found this really interesting and cool and like thought provoking without actually wanting to listen to any more Smashing Pumpkins for a while, which I think is what they're going for. So, I'll stamp your card for that. Sixth place, 8 points.
So I cheated and only listened to the 4.5 minute single edit of this song because on Spotify,
yeah,
you can't actually get the full length version for whatever reason. Like it's grayed out. Because so I had to
Spotify
go elsewhere.
Loves you and wants you to be happy.
But if you go to their greatest hits album, Rotten Apples, on Spotify, they do have the single edit. And I was like, you know what? 4.5 minutes, it will be fine. But I really did enjoy this song. And it has such a nice, dreamy, almost Southern California quality when compared mm-hmm. to so many of the other songs on this soundtrack. And it doesn't sound like the Paul Westerberg song. It doesn't sound like any of the other songs. It's just its own thing. And I think it is a great song to end this album.
Yes.
This is just agree. Like the right sort of ride your boogie board out into the horizon song to take us home on.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it did remind me of Today. You're so right. And it just reminded me that I like Smashing Pumpkins. But like you said, I also didn't go listen to them again. Maybe this was just enough to scratch that itch.
Yeah.
But much love to Smashing Pumpkins. I ended up putting the song in 8th. And the patrons put it one place higher than you. They put it in 5th. So that's a very strong showing for Drown.
The magic
the
of editing.
The tallies are done.
The mathic of editing has brought us our results, which have the force of law.
In very last place, with a mere 5 points, it's Chloe Dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost feel like somehow last is still too high. And then it tells you something. To go to 12th place, you jump from 5 points all the way up to 12 points. So that is Seasons by Chris Cornell.
Okay.
In 11th place with 13 points, it's Breath by Pearl Jam. In 10th place with 14 points, it's Birth Ritual by Soundgarden. In 9th place with 16 points, it is Jimi Hendrix, May This Be Love. In 8th place with 18 points, it is the Lovemongers with Battle of Evermore, We See You Heart. Oh, we had a tie for 8th place. Yes, that's why I got paused. And then also tied in 8th place is Overblown by Mudhoney, also with 18 points. And then going up to 6th place, a nice leap up to 23 points. It's Smashing Pumpkins with Drown. Okay, so then in 5th place, it's State of Love and Trust by Pearl Jam. In 4th place, it's Nearly Lost You with 27 points by The Screaming Trees.
Okay.
In 3rd place with 29 points, it's Paul Westerberg's Waiting for Somebody. So that means Paul Westerberg obviously is a double medalist in this particular tournament.
In this grunge album.
Okay. Yeah. In 2nd place, it's Wood by Alice in Chains with 35 points. And with 38 points, the clear first place winner is Paul Westerberg with Dyslexic Heart. So yes, two Paul Westerberg songs in the top three of a grunge album.
Great. But then also Alice in Chains. Like, I don't think this was all that suspenseful, but like, I am glad that we were all kind of on the same page with that vocal and just Alice in Chains' I don't know, like, provocative competence?
Yeah, why provocative not? Competence. I also feel like if you were to say, here are the only two songs you need to hear from the single soundtrack, Dyslexic Heart and Wood, I would say, yes, that is in fact right.
Yeah, agree.
So collectively, we got it just right, y'all.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much, Patreons, for your help. All the rest of you, you can join in this voting fun, patreon.com/mastass. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that we are a proud member of the Believe Network. You can find out more at BLEAV.com. Thank you, Believe, for having us. And thank you, Mark, for returning to this Gen X fog of... something.
to return to the flannel middle.
Yes, the great plaid middle. It's where we live, and we brought a flask, so we hope we will see you there. Thanks for listening, and come back next week for the Pulp Fiction ranking, a.k.a. the great surf middle.
Yeah, oh my God, that's exactly right.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.